If you think about it, initially we drive around, look at all these big apartment complexes. We don't even think about who owns these complexes. I just assume like billionaires are probably owning this. Complexes are, it's passed down from through families or something like that. But when I researched more, what I realized is it's owned by people like you and me.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor!
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 Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. Today, we have an amazing episode for you. My friend Raj is coming on the podcast and providing a masterclass in commercial real estate investing, specifically all about syndications. Raj is a world-renowned pediatric cancer researcher, oncologist, real estate entrepreneur, investor, founder, and manager of Arya Capital. Raj went to medical school in India and trained in London, Illinois, and California. He has a master's degree from the University of Southern California and an MBA from the University of Massachusetts. He owns and manages several rental properties in Houston and has invested in multifamily syndications for more than 5 years. He's currently a general partner or a limited partner in more than 10 properties, totaling more than 1,700 doors. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Physicians and Properties. I'm your host, Alex Schlow. Today, we have another amazing episode packed full of value for you. My friend Raj owns over 1,700 doors while working as a world-renowned pediatric oncologist. He's going to teach us all about commercial real estate and how passive investing in real estate syndications is an amazing way to build long-term wealth and financial freedom for physicians. Raj, my friend, so glad to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Alex, for having me as a guest on this show. It's an honor.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to it since I was a guest on your awesome show. So I'm glad that I get to hear your story this time, which will be awesome. So if you don't mind, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So as you said, I'm based out of Houston. To keep it short, I went to medical school in India, trained in UK, came here, did another residency, did a fellowship in pediatric hematology oncology. So I'm an oncologist and an oncology section chief in a large academic medical center. So like everyone else, my main focus was being an academic physician, research, publishing papers, those kinds of things. And around the time I turned 40, I started thinking about, hey, what else is going on in life? I looked at my 401k, my Vanguard investment account. Up to that point, I'd done everything right. I rarely spend a lot of money on things. I keep the car. My first car I kept for 15 years. But there was something missing there because even though I did everything right, the balance in my accounts didn't look good. So that's why I started looking at, hey, what else I could be doing to accelerate my journey towards financial freedom, accelerate my journey towards security or financial security. That's when I got interested in real estate. And I looked into all kinds of real estate and finally zoned in on multifamily investing as the thing for me. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years. And it has been a great journey, great learning experience. Hopefully I can add some value to the viewers about this type of investing.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you have a ton of value to add. We've talked about a lot of different avenues of real estate investing in the past. What do you think, you know, looking at your retirement accounts and looking at that, I know we're fortunate for the most part as physicians to make a good income. Why do you think physicians just stick to the traditional retirement accounts and investing routes and are a little bit more hesitant to get into real estate?
So I do think so. I'm not against real estate stock market investing. I actually still do stock market investing. Right. When I first started doing, it's an interesting journey. I came from UK. I saved a lot of money, came here. And then when I first knew about investing or read about investing, I started looking at how I invested in like single stocks like Microsoft, GE, those kinds of things. Very quickly, I realized, and this was based on recommendation from Morningstar. I looked at all these great review sites. Everyone said 5-star. Then I invested in GE. They said that's the best stock out there. It was just selling for $28. And then 1 year later, it became $8. So then I realized, okay, this is not for me. And of course, also investing depends on what time period you are in. I always do like index funds. I don't dab into stock market, day trading, those kinds of things. I like index funds because you put it in and forget it. And I look at the balance once a year kind of thing. But as you know, even in index funds, when the stock market is always an up and down thing. Today, you may be up to 15%. Next week, you may be down 15% again. So it's like a seesaw going on. And what I thought was, hey, all my money is in stock market, 401k, what various forms. What if I want to retire next year and suddenly there is a 30% drop? Am I going to be stuck in my job for a couple of more years waiting for the stock market to come up? Or what is the hedge against that kind of thing? I was looking for something which doesn't directly correlate with the stock market. And as I learn more about it, you see all the people who are like the common thing which said is, which is true, is real estate had made more millionaires than any other sector, right? So the real estate is a very good place to invest your money. And again, it's not an overnight get rich quick scheme, but if you are consistent and there, it actually gives a lot of rewards, better risk adjusted returns than stock market or any other investing I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think certainly a balanced portfolio is really important, especially for retirement and moving forward. But again, yeah, that security that real estate can offer, that inflation hedge that real estate can offer, the tax benefits, there's a lot of great reasons to invest in real estate. So commercial multifamily, you're the expert in that. And it's an incredible asset class. If you're okay with it, how about we kind of dive into commercial multifamily syndication, what that looks like? And, you know, hey, I'm a family medicine doctor. I'm not that smart. So explain syndication and commercial multifamily to me like I'm a golden retriever or a fifth grader, okay?
So sure. So the way I learned about it is, I had no clue what a commercial real estate, because all these terms, right? So I was looking for single family homes. So when I started real estate, my goal was I'll buy one house per year for 10 years and then I'll retire. So I'll have 10 different tenants paying me rent every month. I use that money to retire. So that's how I started out. And this was during COVID. And I went to talk to a lot of brokers. They would not even talk to me. They said, I'm a doctor. Please talk to me. No. They said, if you have cash, we'll talk to you. We don't care about getting a loan and buying a house. And everyone was paying like full cash, above asking price. So what I did is, I was so desperate, frustrated with this process, I started looking at myself without the broker and went and bought a 7-unit property here in Houston. Not a very good area. That's how I could afford the 7-unit. But when I bought it, they said, hey, I want a mortgage. They said, oh, you cannot get a residential mortgage. You have to get a commercial mortgage. What exactly is commercial? So commercial, at least for residential, like apartments or houses, is anything above 4 units is considered as a commercial real estate. Of course, commercial real estate, there are a lot of other things you can do. Triple net investing, hotels, anything else, which is businesses thing, that those are commercial real estate. But if you think about just having tenants, anything above 4 units is a commercial real estate. And again, when I did more research on it, say, hey, I bought the 7-unit property. I did all this paperwork. I went and found the brokers, mortgage company, insurance, everything. But what is the difference between buying a 7-unit versus a 70-unit versus a 700-unit? If you think about it, initially, we drive around, look at all these big apartment complexes. We don't even think about who owns these complexes. I just assume like billionaires are probably owning this complexes. Or it's passed down from through families or something like that. But when I researched more, what I realized is it's owned by people like you and me. And when you scale bigger, it provides some unique advantages to you. For example, so if I have a 4-unit property, it's pretty good, or 1-unit, single family home. If you have a good tenant, less work, it keeps cash flowing, very good. Say you unfortunately get a tenant who is not that good, or they fall into bad times, or they destroy your house, then your cash flow stops. Then at that point, you immediately become negative cash flow. It becomes a liability, not an asset at that. But if you imagine, if we buy a 100-unit property, even 5 of those tenants are not paying rent, you still have 95 tenants paying rent. So it provides you the cushion. The other thing which advantage it gives you is you can have your own person to manage this property. As a property manager, you can have a maintenance person. So you don't have to pay for people, a plumber, every time they have that as a problem. So that also saves you a lot of money. And also the way that these things are valued is different when compared to single family home. It's completely run as a business. So if you can increase the income, decrease the expenses, your returns go up pretty, very high. So that's the main advantage of commercial real estate or multifamily. So when you talk about how we go about buying it, so that's when the real estate syndication comes. So real estate syndication is basically a group of people coming together to buy these apartment complexes. Usually the people who are called as limited partners, they contribute the money. Then people who are called as general partners, they do all the work. So then when they make profit, they split the profits among themselves. For the limited partners, they give advantage, which is a lot of doctors who don't have time, right? So they have the money, but they would rather work in the hospital than take care of all these apartments. So they can put the money in and they don't have any liability, and then just they enjoy the returns from the apartment. And on the other hand, general partners, they have the expertise. They know how to manage this. They know how to manage the property management company. They know how to find deals, and they do all the work. For that, they get a small portion of the profit as returns to them. So it's basically people coming together to buy this property. That's how most apartment complexes in the country are owned, is by a group of people like you and me.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. That was awesome. You know, I think the first thing that really stuck out was you got started investing in real estate. And instead of doing what we typically do, buy that single family home, you jumped right to a 7-unit property. What was that like, buying a 7-unit for your first real estate investment? What were some of the fears that you had in regards to that?
I think I was very naive, to be honest, when I first went into that. So I have a lot of interesting stories in my first 7-unit property, right? So as soon as you say you're a physician, people think you have a lot of money and they all try to extract money from you. So I'll give you just examples of this. When I bought the 7-unit property, right, the first thing which happened is, okay, you put it under the contract. My realtor said, hey, you have 2 days. You need to sign the contract and it's like binding contract. You cannot go back, those kinds of things. Then he recommended a home inspection. Like, these are small units, like these are 800 square feet. It's not like big, the detached units. And I got this inspector recommended by the realtor. The first thing I didn't do is ask the inspector how much he's going to charge me. Because I thought, oh, there is a standard charge it's going to be. And then I was very keen to learn. So I was with the inspector the whole time. He spent about 2.5 hours in the 7 units. And then he sent me a bill for $2,500. Plus, he charged me, I think, $50 per unit for termite inspection. I said, you didn't do any termite inspection. What are you talking about? He said, oh, it's just a visual inspection. That's how you do termites. So I did a visual inspection. There were no termites. I'm going to charge you $50. So, okay. I said, okay, this is the first lesson learned. Then my realtor brought in a contractor to look at all the things. After the inspection, inspector said, hey, there is a foundation problem in one of the buildings. And the contractor came. He said, oh, I'll fix it for you. It's pretty simple. It's like $35,000. I can fix this whole thing. And he even walked on the floor and said, see how slanting is this? I'm going downhill from here. Then I always had a suspicion of $35,000, that's fine. I actually got a foundation company to come and look at it. And they brought in all their fancy equipment and they said, oh, there is no problem with foundation. I don't know why someone told you there is a foundation issue. You don't have to do anything for this problem. So they're trying to get $35,000 from me when there was no issue at all. I didn't know any better. I usually trust people face value. Okay, why would someone lie to me? So they're the professionals. Let them do the job. The third thing which happened is then the realtor came back to me and said, hey, they're paying only 2.5% commission for me. My commission is 3%. You need to pay me the 0.5% commission. This was never in the contract. So those are just examples of what happens when you don't know what you're doing. So that's how I got into that. But a lot of lessons learned. It was a lower risk investment because as a physician, I wasn't putting a lot of money into it. My down payment was like $150,000 and the total cost was about $600,000. So it was not a lot of money. So I was willing to take that risk initially. But I learned a lot from it. And then now I know, okay, double check, triple check what people are telling you. They may seem very nice when they talk to you, but it's always good to check.
Yeah, there's a lot there as well. I think it's so important to, like you said, get multiple different bids from contractors, have multiple folks look at it. Because we've had similar experience with our properties. You get someone out there and they're like, oh, this needs to be fixed. It's going to be $30,000 or this needs to be fixed and it's going to be $50,000. We had some water mitigation issues at one of our Airbnbs. And one of the contractors told us we needed to build this huge retaining wall that was going to cost us $50,000. We had another gentleman come out there and they looked at the basement and they said, oh yeah, I can fix this for $500. There's just a little piece of the foundation that needs to be tarred and waterproofed and you'll be all fine. And that worked. So, we went from $50,000 to $500. And so it's always good to get bids like that. And I think it's always great to hear those stories that people have where things didn't work out perfectly as planned in real estate. We hear a lot of all the good things that happen in real estate, but we don't always hear the bad things. And I think we really learn from those stories. So thanks for being willing to share that. Do you still have that 7-unit property?
Yes, I do. And again, the other thing you have to realize in real estate is, of course, the other lesson I learned from the property is, of course, I bought it, right? And paper, the cash flow was great. There's more than 1%. It's a 7-unit I bought for $600,000. It was already renting for $900 per unit, and it was less than the market rent. Right now, I'm renting it for $1,000. It's only like a couple of years. But location, 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 the real estate. This was not in a good part of the town. That's why I got it so cheap. And that's why it's cash flowing a lot. But I had a lot of issues with tenants. Thanks. Whenever you buy in a bad location, the tenant issue, this is a class C, the tenant issue is going to be there. Fortunately, I have a very good property manager. I pay him a lot of money. And because as a physician, I don't want to deal with those issues. He takes care of it. So far, I haven't lost money and just started positive cash flow right now. So after stabilization, now hopefully I had to basically get new tenants for all 7 units, a lot of evictions and those kinds of things. The second lesson I learned, which I learned from the property manager, which is good for physicians who are starting out, is when we buy these properties, we imagine ourselves living in it. So you want to make all these cosmetic things. There are a couple of things. One was like roof was a little bit sagging in one property, right? So that's going to cost me like $10,000 to fix. I went to my property manager and said, hey, let's fix all the things we found in the inspection. His thing was, why? I said, oh, the inspection said these are the things I need to fix. He said, this is not affecting the tenant, how they live in this property. Why would you waste your money? So don't do all these things. Only fix things which is required for the tenant. There are things like caulking of all the external walls. So he said, no, just wait. It's okay. That's the second lesson I learned is we try to make it as if we are living in there. We just need to make sure it's safe for the tenant. It's good for the tenant, but don't put a lot more money in because it's a business at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think matching kind of the neighborhood, right? You don't necessarily need granite countertops in a C-class neighborhood. And speaking of a C-class neighborhood, do you mind for our listeners just kind of explaining what the different classes are and kind of what that means when you're looking at buying properties?
Sure. So in general, there can be a class for the property or class for the location, right? So in general, it says A, B, C, and D. If you can imagine A class location or property, you can imagine ourselves living in it. If we are forced to live in an apartment where we live, we will want a newer apartment, good amenities, like a gym, club rooms, those kinds of things. Everything looks really beautiful. So that's A-class property. So typically higher end apartments. B-class is somewhere between A and C. It's slightly older, within about 20 years. It's built in the last 20 years. The amenities are there, but not as good as A-class thing. The location is similarly, it's not an A-class location, a little bit lower location. C, in general, is a working-class neighborhood and blue-collar workers. That's what C-class apartments serve, is typically their rents are about, of course, it varies every year or increases every year, about $1,000 per unit. That's what you're looking at. It's a slightly older 1980s, 90s, sometimes 1970s built apartment. They're not upgraded significantly, but they you can live in it. It's a perfectly fine place to live, but cosmetically, it doesn't look really good, and it doesn't have all the amenities for the residents. And then D class is generally what this is what you would avoid. These are like boarded up areas, very bad tenant. You get it very cheap if you want to get it, but basically you're going to put a lot of work and it's a very, very high risk. In general, from A to D, the risk goes up, the returns go up as well. So it's always proportional, right? A class, typically you get, it's very safe. Tenants are always paying rent. There is very little default. They keep the properties very well. So the risks are lower. So returns are typically lower. B is a little bit higher. C is the highest return you'll get. D you completely avoid. Don't even go there unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a great summary. I always heard D is your war zone, so stay away from there. And I think, you know, there's, like you said, different pros and cons to being in each asset class. I've also heard, you know, your A-class properties are typically going to appreciate more, but a little bit less cash flow. And that also is kind of proportionate as you go down as well. Appreciation decreases as you go down in classes and cash flow tends to increase. And of course, that depends on where you're investing and the quality of the property and the quality of the tenant as well. That's awesome. So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2 years, when you bought the 7-unit to now, you have over 1,700 doors. Is that correct?
Yes. So when I say 1,700, sometimes I feel like it's slightly deceiving because I'm not the owner of the 1,700 doors. I own a small part of it, right? So as I talked about, these are real estate syndications. We closed about 4 properties all. We generally go and buy greater than 100 unit apartments, but it's a team sport. It's owned by multiple GPs and then hundreds of LPs. So I own a very small part of it. So I'm not owning 1,700 doors, but I'm in the management team for 1,700 doors or 1,700 things. So that's what I want to make a key difference. Because people think, oh my God, this guy actually owns that. I'm not getting rent from 1,700 doors. I'm getting a small amount of this ownership. Like, depending on how much I contribute to each of these apartments, I get a small part of it.
Oh, I was going to say, absolutely. One day you're going to own 1,700 doors yourself. I have no doubt about that, Raj. So we kind of talked a little bit about the difference between the GP and the LP position. So general partner, limited partner, typically your general partners, the one really doing the hustle, finding the deals, running the numbers, running the day-to-day management of that property. And then an LP is your passive investor that's bringing the money into the deal and kind of almost getting that mailbox money. I think, you know, I kind of think of an LP in a syndication deal as about as passive as you can get in real estate. A little bit less of the upside because of, frankly, doing a little bit less of the work. But of course, the money is an important contribution to the syndication to buy the property. Why do you think physicians are in a good position to be limited partners in a syndication deal?
So typically, It depends on what your priorities are. The number one commodity for physicians is actually time. That's what they want. The cash flow is usually pretty good unless you're a pediatrician like me, but you're high income earners. But time, because often they're already, the first part of their life, they put in 80 hours a week. And then middle part of the life, they have kids. They're still working, like taking on calls once a week or those kinds of things. When they're doing those things, what they want the most is time and also security, right? So jobs, like with all the things that are happening in medicine right now, a lot of people, they call it burnout, but I wouldn't call it burnout because it's something people to make it sound like it's the internal problem of the physician. It's not. The system has changed so much that a lot of physicians thinking about quitting or their positions may, that is a mid-level creep, their position may be taken away. So they're all looking for security. But if you have high income, it's much easier. You don't want to spend 20 hours a week, which I do, to scrutinizing all these deals or doing active real estate. Of course, if you're passionate about it, you can do it. But most people don't want to learn another skill, spend time, rather they would rather spend time with their family. So you had alluded to the returns. Of course, the syndication is pretty good return in usually. Of course, no one can promise you or guarantee you the return, but it usually typically produces more returns than a stock market if you look at it over time. So it's a very good investment. It may not be, so if you buy a single family home and manage it yourself, you may actually make more money than a syndication, but you have to give some value for the time you're spending. If you're working in a hospital, you get paid $300 an hour. And if you're having a single family home and you're spending 20 hours a year, conservatively, then you have to get like $6,000 more than what you'll get in a syndication because you have to put some value for your own time. So that's why most doctors, it makes sense to invest in syndications as a passive investor. The returns are pretty high. Usually the returns you're talking about is, of course, each deal is different, but you're talking about anywhere from 15 to 20% per year. That's what most syndication deals aim to get. And that's a pretty good return for a passive investing.
Absolutely. Return on time, I think, is something that's so important and doesn't get talked about enough, especially in our space. Like you said, physicians, we work hard, work a lot of hours every week, probably work more hours than we should. And so our time is really important and really valuable. And that's something I've been learning a lot personally is, hey, what's my return on time for this specific thing? Does it make sense for me to go spend an hour and a half mowing the lawn or just pay someone to mow the lawn and go spend that hour and a half with my family? I'm going to choose family every time. And that's something I'm working on. I'm definitely a frugal person, a cheap person. And that's something that I'm working on improving on as we go forward.
And that's also one of the reasons I wanted to scale up quickly. If I'm buying a single family home, the amount of paperwork I'm doing versus I'm buying a multifamily 10 unit, 20 units, there is not a lot of difference. The amount of time I spend, there's not, of course, there'll be a little bit more, but that is not because the insurance, I'm just getting one insurance. I'm paying one tax for all these properties. I'm going to do the same. I'm forming the same LLC for these 7 unit when compared to 1 unit. So that's why the time, that proportion, the time I spend 1 hour, what is the return on that 1 hour is higher if you go bigger. So that's one of the reasons I'm into multifamily.
Yeah, absolutely. The economies of scale, the leverage with commercial multifamily. It's like you said earlier. I mean, if you have a single family home and you have to replace the roof, there goes your cash flow. There goes your profit for probably the entire year. You have your apartment that's 100 units, roof goes out, you replace that, you're still getting rent from hopefully a full apartment of 100 tenants, but you have those economies of scale, you have that balance and that buffer zone to help with these capital expenditures. What, going back to limited partnerships, what is something or how would you recommend a physician who's looking for investing as a limited partner for the first time, how would you recommend them analyze a deal or what are some tips and tricks that you've learned in your experience on how to evaluate if a deal is a good one?
Yeah. So one of the issues now is, of course, when I go to all these real estate meetings, right, about real estate syndication, the typical example everyone gives is go and find doctors. So it's very funny when I go, the first thing they say is find a bunch of doctors and market to them, right? So as a physician, you get bombarded with all these things. They say, hey, this is the great deal. This is a great deal. It becomes overwhelming. Sometimes it becomes irritating because everyone is trying to sell something to you. There is like hundreds of thousands of people doing this. It's very difficult to know who is genuine, who is qualified, which deal is best. So the first thing I always recommend is try to acquire some amount of, of course, you don't have a lot of time, but at least the basics of multifamily you need to understand before you start investing. So I highly recommend listening to podcasts like this one. So that one, you're not actively spending time. You can listen to it when you're driving or doing exercise. That's what I do whenever I do it. Physical exercise, I'm listening to a podcast, watching a YouTube video to learn something new about stuff. So that's what I would start off with. And then talk to your friends and family to see if they may be already investing and find out what their experience is and who do they invest with? How long have they known these people? And what are their returns like? Did they do what they promised? So a lot of times when they present to you, they'll say, hey, I produced 30% returns in the last 5 years in all my deals. But the thing to remember is the last 5 years were not normal. I can be a very bad operator. I go and find a 100-unit apartment. I didn't have to do anything because the rents went through the roof. My returns would have been very high. I can come to you and say, hey, I produced 37% return in the last 2 years. That sounds amazing. But how much of it was because of my skills or my qualification? How much was it was because of the market was just going up and up and up during COVID? There are a lot of money printed and everything like that. So it's always not, that doesn't give you an idea to scrutinize the operator just because they had 37% return last deal. That doesn't mean the next deal is going to be good as well. The way I approach it is first, most important thing for a real estate syndication is the operator, number one. So if the operator, it's not like just buy a 100-unit property and then sit and make money. A lot of people think, hey, why am I paying this GP this much money? Like 30% of profit, I'm getting 70% of the profit. But you don't realize what goes on and behind the scenes. You need a lot of skills to manage these apartments, manage the personnel, make sure everything is on time, the manage, implement the business plan, those kinds of things. So the operator is the number one thing you need to look at. Number two is the market. So market is, so we look for places where the population is increasing, the jobs are increasing. So there is low crime. People are always trying to move and the laws are very friendly to landlords. So the market is the second thing which we look at before we select an operator, select investment. And the third thing is the property. So the often people look at the property, then market, then operator, and actually not in the property, they look at the returns first. So, but it's a reverse order. You always look at the operator first, market, property, and then you have to have your own criteria. Hey, am I comfortable investing in Class C, Class B, Class A? You need to understand the differences and the return, your return projection, like our priorities or goals. And then the last thing is the returns. And then again, one deal to the next deal and compare. People say, hey, you said 17% IRR on the last deal, a 17% return. This deal is 14%. So I'll always go with the 17%. But you have to see, as I told you before, higher the returns, usually the higher the risk. People don't realize that. Second thing is all these returns are projections based on the business plan. So this is the best guess from the GP. So if they change a small parameter like cap rate or capitalization rate, which is basically an imaginary thing, which how much people are willing to pay for an apartment, the lower the cap rate, the higher the value of the apartment. So if the GP in the Excel file puts my selling cap rate as 4.5 instead of 5, that's going to increase the value of the apartment millions of dollars. And that's going to increase the return projections a lot. So it's very important to understand those aspects and just not go by, hey, this guy says he's going to give 30%. This guy says 20%. 30% is better than 20%. Usually, if they promise a very high return, like 30%, I would actually not invest in those deals. Because I have to say, why is this guy able to do much better than anyone else in the market, right? So market has a way to correct. So typical returns are 15 to 20%. If there's above that, you have to ask the question, how are you going to do this when everyone, thousands of others are not able to do it?
Oh, I was just going to say, guys, go back, listen to the last 5 minutes of what Raj just said, because that's so important going forward. You're investing in the operator. You're investing in them as people. So you want to have that relationship with them and look at that and see, do your goals align, do your core values align, and then start looking at the properties, start looking at the deal, start looking at the potential returns. But if you don't mesh with the operator that's offering or the general partner that's offering that deal, don't invest in it.
Yeah. One other tidbit I want to add there is when people get offered a deal, the common industry thing is, hey, instill a sense of urgency in the investor. Or you say, hey, you need to invest by next week. Don't let them wander around. That's what the common teaching is. Make sure they know that if they don't invest right now, they're going to miss out. Right? I never tell that to my investors. Right? There is always going to be next deal. This is not going to be the last deal you're going to see in your life. Don't feel pressured to invest in. Take your time. Learn about stuff. The other thing, so one plug I want to put in is, this was a common question a lot of people asked. So I created a website. It's called passiveinvestingchecklist.com. So one more time, it's passiveinvestingchecklist.com. So what this is, if we go there, I don't advertise any deals or anything like that. This is just for the LP. They go in, if they have a deal in front of them, they can put all that. It goes through a questions, like step by step. It asks about the operator, it asks about the market, it asks about the property, it asks about the returns. So that gives a systematic way for investors to analyze the deal. So they can put in the parameters and then we send a report to them at the end of it through their email. So which they can have a summary of the whole thing, whatever questions they asked. Or if they don't have a deal, they can also download a PDF document. They can save it in a computer. So when they have their next deal, they can actually, it's a fillable PDF. They don't even have to go to the website. They can just fill that PDF. And then that makes them think about different aspects of looking at a deal. Otherwise, it can be pretty overwhelming to analyze a deal. So we made it simple by going through questions. Just answer the questions, then you'll have an idea about the deal.
That's awesome. Yeah, check out passiveinvestingchecklist.com. We'll have a link for that in the show notes. What an awesome value that you're offering to the listeners there, Raj. Thanks for doing that. Well, what are you working on right now? What deals are you guys working on right now?
So we have two. So in general, our criteria. So let me first tell about our criteria for investing. Our primary markets are Texas and Southeast. And when I actually started out with multifamily, we did some of Class C deals. Now, because of the state of the economy, the numbers, I moved towards Class A and B kind of properties. When I say Class A and B, like newer built properties in a very good area, catering to the upper end of the market. So that's what we are doing. So we currently have a property in Arkansas, which we're very excited about. It's Northwest Arkansas. We have 376 unit property. We actually already closed on the first two phases in January. So we have closed on 240 units and we are waiting for the builder to build out the third phase, which we are closing in June, July. And in the 5 months of ownership, we already have like 96% occupancies, a default, or like all the people are paying rent. So we are excited about that one. The second one is we just got one under contract in Houston. That's the first property I'm actually doing in my own backyard, in a place called Generation Park, which is one of the largest business parks in the country, with industrial business parks. So we have a property under contract about 1 mile from that. So we are just working on that one as well. Those are the two main things we're working on. So the other thing I'm excited about right now, of course, I do real estate, but I also do other entrepreneurship. I started a software company which caters to real estate entrepreneurs. So that's the other thing I've been working on, the systems and those kinds of things for the software company.
That's awesome. Raj, you're a busy doctor. How do you have time to do all these things, to invest in real estate, to start a software company, you know, be a great father? How do you do all these things?
So one of the things, I'm fortunate, of course, because I do less clinical care right now and a lot of administration research. The number of hours I work hasn't changed, but it has given me more flexibility. Like I'm not on call. I have a lot of weekends free. So that previously I used to work 80 hours a week. Now I still work 80 hours a week, but less for the hospital side, more on the other side as well. So that has been very helpful, but more flexibility at work. As you move higher up in rank, you get some flexibility and work. So that has been helpful. The second thing, of course, my wife is awesome. She has been very supportive. I don't know how long she gave me when I started out. She said, like, I'm going to give you 1 year, do whatever you need to do kind of thing. Now I extended that 1 year longer and she hasn't told anything. So that's the other thing. That's the prioritization of things. So when you do multiple things, what I found is people generally tend to like expand into the time they have, right? For example, I always tell them in my hospital, don't put any meeting above 30 minutes. If you put 30 minutes versus 60 minutes, the same amount of work will get done. So I better have 30-minute meeting than a 60-minute meeting. Similar to that, if you expand whatever you do to the time we have, so if you have multiple things, you tend to prioritize better. You're forced to prioritize. So that's what I have found. Now, for example, whenever I do the exercise, I listen to the podcast. Right? So I'm trying to cut down on watching TV a lot. I used to watch a lot of TV before. I don't watch much TV anymore because what I'm doing is more exciting for me. So I don't need to have that specific entertainment. So that's how I think managing time, it automatically comes to you when you have like other priorities. So you prioritize that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think it's Parkinson's law is exactly what you're describing, that work will expand essentially to the time that you allow for it. So if you're giving yourself 8 hours to work, it's going to take those 8 hours. If you're giving yourself 2 hours to get that work done, you can probably get it done in 2 hours, that same amount of work. One thing I've learned from you, and thanks for giving me a little peek inside the software company the other day, it's amazing the systems that you've built out. So I think just like we talk about leverage in real estate, you can really leverage systems to help you get more done in less time as well. And you're a perfect example of that. So thanks for letting me see that the other day. That software company is really going to do big things for you.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you think is one piece of advice you would give a new resident intern who wants to get started in real estate, or just a piece of advice you'd want to give a new intern in general?
So if not only me, if you ask anyone who's doing real estate, the number one piece of advice is start early, right? I wish I had started early in real estate. So that's what I would do. So even if it's a resident, you don't have any money, but you can start educating yourself. You can do things like house hacking, right? Which you already do, Alex. So those are the things. Just start out, of course, diversification. Now, I would never say real estate is the only means to make money, right? It's one of the means to make money. Whatever thing you choose, educate yourself first. The other thing which I found is patience and persistence. That's the word I use often. When you first start out, it would feel like, oh my God, everyone else is making it great in the space. I'm just starting out. I'm so far behind. Nothing is working out for me. But just keep at it. You'll eventually get there. So each person's journey is different. The timeline is going to be different. So start early, be patient and persistent in whatever you do.
I love that. Yeah, patience and persistence is key for sure in investing in real estate. What is something that you need right now in order to help grow your real estate business? Or what's something that you're looking for that maybe the listeners or folks that are going to hear this in the future can help you with?
So right now, of course, I need more investors, to be honest, because my company depends on having as many investors as possible so that we can scale bigger, buy more properties. So my entire thing is focused on how I can provide value to others, bring in investors, bring value to them, those kinds of things. So that's one. Of course, again, as I said, it takes time. So I'm not in a hurry to do it, but eventually I'll get there. So that's what I'm looking for, finding more deals, giving more value, giving money back to the investors. So again, real estate is not overnight. It takes time. So I'm happy to be patient and get there.
Absolutely. Well, Raj, where can people find out more about you? Where can they find out about REI Doc and find your podcast?
So I'm actually on all the social media. If you type REI Doc, it'll come. My thing will pop up. It's my branding. They can always visit our website. It's called www.redoc.com, REIDOC.com. They can find information on there. I have a Facebook group, which is very active. It's called REI Doctors. So you can come and join that Facebook group as well. So we can find in many ways. You can always call me, text me. There is a chat function in our website. So if you put any information, it directly comes from my cell phone. I give you a call immediately as well. Even if you don't want to invest, you're not ready to go in real estate, I'm always happy to talk to people. In every time I talk to people, I gain something from them. They gain something from me. It's always a two-way exchange. So I'm very happy to talk to people, help them out. Even if they're not going to invest in multifamily, I can give them my experience. I can connect to people like you. They're invested in something. I have a lot of connections. So I can connect to different people depending on what they're looking for.
Absolutely. Well, I gained a lot of value today from talking with you. And it was a two-way exchange between us and I'm sure between the listeners as well. Thank you so much for your time. We'll have all the links in the show notes for how folks can contact you and reach out to you, as well as a little bit more about the Doctor Syndication School that you're working on. This was a masterclass in commercial real estate investing and syndications. Raj, thank you so much for your time. It's been Raj and Alex with the Physicians and Properties podcast, signing off.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My two-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance, and talk to you on the next episode. Please note that the information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.